Show.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A new week begins. A minute and a half past the hour on this Monday, the, 8th day of June, 2009. And, just a couple of housekeeping announcements before we get started. It's going to be rather of a busy week. Like I said, going to be rather of a busy week. Agnes, myself, the whole fam damily will be traveling to Charleston tomorrow morning, entirely too early for the appeal board hearing, which is pro forma at best, insofar as there is, for people who live in the coal fields in this state, nothing of justice and perhaps less than nothing of mercy when it comes to slowing the onslaught of mountain removal. But we'll be there the next couple of mornings. As for this evening, we may be a bit truncated. I have been asked to help a good friend of mine with a little project that can only be done this time of evening. So I'm probably going to bail out a little bit later this evening and in about an hour, and go and attend to that. My apologies. But it is going to be a busy week. But we've got an hour to cuss and discuss, and your thoughts are always welcome, of course. You know how that works. You know the phone number, too, of course, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. That's toll-free if you need us to pay the freight. Or on your own nickel, if you've got some sort of unlimited long-distance dialing plan, don't hurt yourself on this account. But you can dial 304-658-3333. Email rolls in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. And we make it's easy to reach the show, easy to get into the chat room. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom, C-H-A-T-R-O-O-M. Register, it's free, secure, and we never use your registration information for, well, frankly, anything, except maybe helping you get into the chat room again if you have some sort of a problem. It's easy. We've got forums at HeadOnRadio, fora at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. We have blogging, too, as well. And so everything is available for you to interact with the program and interact even during off-air hours as you wish. So, okay, we've gotten all the preliminaries out of the way. I'll be at this for about the next 56 minutes or so. Oh, where to start today? Well, I imagine those of you who are keeping up with the news probably know what was jumped out at me this morning, namely the ruling from the Supreme Court of the United States, minus the rats, mind you, ongoing thanks to our buddy Sean for that acronym, rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, the four rats on the Supreme Court, the conservatives, all dissented, or all the three joined the dissent that was authored by John Roberts in the case regarding buying justice in West Virginia. to which the good-for-nothing, dead-from-the-neck-up, soulless, motherless, ethicsless, morally bankrupt rats all said, well, what's the problem with that? You can buy justice. Happens all the time here. Remember, hey, Fat Tony, remember when Dick Cheney had litigation with you before the court and you went off duck hunting with him? There wasn't no problem with that, was it? Nah, there wasn't no problem with that. Hey, he knew better than to shoot me in the face. Yeah, well, so what's the problem? But five justices got it right. Ginsburg, Souter, Breyer, Kennedy, and Stevens. And they said, in fact, they said that justice, even using the word in front of that little creep's name is kind of sickening, Justice Brent Benjamin of the West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals should have recused himself rather than participating in the suit against the appeal of Massey Energy of a monumental verdict against it in a lawsuit brought for its dirty practices in driving Harmon Mining right out of business. And it even made the big list at Think Progress today, thinkprogress.org. And the only thing is, I can't sort out, because the early stories that I read, especially the coverage coming from Reuters, said by a five, and this is from the article, by a 5-4 vote, the justices ruled against Harmon Mining Corporation and held that a West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals judge should have removed himself from deciding the case because the Massey executive had spent $3 million to help him get elected to the court. That's kind of a no-brainer, right? Justice Kennedy wrote the opinion for the majority. He said, we find that in all the circumstances of this case, due process requires recusal. The only question is, what does that mean against Harmon Mining? Harmon Mining was the company that brought this Supreme Court challenge and won. So either we've got some questionable journalism going on here, or it was one of those sort of apple and a roadmap verdicts where, hey, you win, but no help. So it remains to be seen what will happen. I'm still trying to find some good follow-up coverage on it. So that's, it is at least good news insofar as it is a refutation of one of the most loathsome, lowly, miserable, dirty human beings extant in West Virginia society, and I won't say culture, and certainly the political landscape, that being Don Blankenship. Think Progress notes that the case was so egregious that John Grisham, you know, who wrote The Firm and The Pelican Brief and all of that stuff, John Grisham even went so far as to turn the case into a legal thriller. The Appeal is the name of the John Grisham book, and I suppose it somewhat mirrors the facts in the case of Harmon Mining versus Massey. But as we will find out more about this case and move on, some other things in the news today that certainly another case. Wow, you remember when the photo came out of Richard Reed the shoe bomber? Remember Richard Reed? Because he was going to blow up an airliner with a bomb in his shoes. And they showed his photograph, and I think Bart Kopp was the first one to note that this is not the face of a competent terrorist. Because the guy just looked completely squirreled. You know, if you just use the Google and go and look at Richard, that photo of Richard Reed, yeah, you know, Osama, this ain't. Well, there's another one of those photographs out, and here I am talking about photographs, you know, dancing about architecture, photographs on radio. Headline, newborn dies, mother found dead in crawl space, woman charged. This photograph of the alleged perpetrator, Karina Roberts, I mean, I don't know, maybe she's readying her insanity defense, because this photograph has crazy written all over it. Those eyes. A 28-year-old Oregon woman has been charged with murder after the body of a new mother was found in the crawl space of her home. Rescue crews first went to Karina Roberts' home in Washington County on Friday. Let me get Washington County, Oregon. Somebody help me with the geography. Am I not going to be surprised that, or are Oregonians not going to be surprised that this happened in Washington County? I frankly don't know. In response to a call of a newborn in distress, they found Roberts' boyfriend unsuccessfully trying to revive the baby using first aid techniques. Roberts told deputies that the baby was hers, the county sheriff's office stated, and then medics noticed blood all over the place. And doctors discovered that Ms. Roberts had not delivered a child at any time in the recent past. And they later found the real mother stuffed in the crawl space under the kitchen. Go figure. She's got one murder charge facing her. After the autopsy determines how the child was delivered, it could be a second murder charge. Just wait. It's okay. No, it's not okay, but just be patient. Be patient, because it won't be very long before we find out that Jesus told Karina Roberts, or Karina, I don't know. Jesus told her to take the baby and raise it for the Lord. You just know. Little heads up from the right-wing murder industry. The guy who, the alleged murderer who allegedly shot and allegedly killed Dr. Tiller, says there's going to be a lot more of these things around the country. That apparently when you're a right-wing killer and you are incarcerated in a county jail or some such in Kansas, you can just pick up the phone and call the Associated Press. And they're right there for you. Earlier he was complaining that he was being treated like a common criminal. And I guess I could agree with him, because he is an uncommonly loathsome murderer. Allegedly. But I guess he expected, cakes and ices? Or that the freaks in the anti-women's insides, anti-choice industry would be singing hosannas outside his jail cell or bust him out for Jesus or some such? Not so much. But yeah, he's unhappy. And in case you were wondering, just going some sort of scattershot here, probably not an appropriate analogy in light of having just covered the Tiller issue. From the Hartford Courant, headline, in an article by Diane Levick, study, most personal bankruptcies caused by medical bills, illness. Now, we might have to get Sherman to crank up the Wayback Machine a little bit for this, but it's worth remembering that back when the Repiglicans, with a lot lot of help from some Democrats, like my senator, Robert Byrd, pushed through bankruptcy reform. Remember when they reformed bankruptcy for poor working people that left it alone for our betters in the corporate class? Remember that? Their justification was that they needed to make credit cards a secured debt. Because this was all, you know, all these bankrupts we were having didn't have anything to do with, you know, the state of the economy, or didn't have anything to do with predatory practices on the part of the credit card companies. Didn't have anything to do, no. It was all because people were running up their credit card debts, or running off to Las Vegas and Atlantic City and Tunica, Mississippi, and just having a high old time and then coming and bankrupting their credit cards and telling the poor little banks and credit card companies to go pound sand. So we had to do something to protect the credit card industry. Hence the bankruptcy reform. Right? Yeah, I remember that too. Well, according to Diane Levick, it turns out that, no, it's not high living and putting a 52-inch Megatron TV in every room that is causing the bankruptcies in this country. Nope. In 2007 alone, medical bills or illness contributed to more than 62% of personal bankruptcies. That's a nearly 50% increase from 2001. And by the way, it also doesn't take into account the number of people who have lost the very underpinnings of their existence as a result of George Bush's chickens finally coming home to roost and the economy collapsing. Those numbers aren't in there. This is 2007. The report by researchers at Harvard, as well as Ohio University, follows a five-state 2005 study that said 46.2% of bankruptcies were caused by medical problems. Yeah, now it's up to 62. Wow, that's 13% increase in the course of 2 years. Sheesh. Since 2001, with identical definitions applied, says Diane Levick, the share of bankruptcies involving medical issues has risen 49.6%. That's a lot of sickness. That's a lot of agony. That's a lot of misery. Can you imagine trying to care for a loved one at the same time that your personal finances are collapsing? I don't have to imagine that because I watched my father do that. And I'm still dealing with the painful ramifications thereof. I have dreams about the home in which I grew up, in which I will never set foot again. And I know a lot of other people have been through that. But I see that house in my dreams, and I wake up sad. And there are many people for whom that's not a former home. And it doesn't happen when they're asleep. For many people, that is a waking nightmare where they pack the boxes and get the hell out because our for-profit healthcare system demands that they do so. The report, which is due out in the August issue of the American Journal of Medicine and came out online on June the 4th, the report says the following, quote, the U.S. healthcare financing system is broken, and not only for the poor and uninsured. Middle-class families frequently collapse under the strain of a healthcare system that treats physical wounds, but often inflicts fiscal ones. Yeah, see, these weren't people who had no coverage. These were people who had that wonderful, what the right wing calls the best health care system in America. Yeah, they had that. They had for-profit insurance. They had health insurance predicated on the suffering, agony, misery, and sickness of human beings. They had that. And it crippled them. It destroyed them. It ate them alive and spit out the bones. Let's see. Out-of-pocket medical expenses averaged $17,943 for medically bankrupt families, $26,971 for uninsured patients, and $17,749 for those who had private insurance. Those numbers aren't entirely square, however, because they don't reflect the realities of what happens when a person becomes too sick to work. God, you can almost hear the pre-conversion Scrooge in Dickens's A Christmas Carol screaming, "Are there no poor houses left?" Well, you know what? I just realized with that last little chuckle that that's equally appropriate coming out of a Republican's mouth.
What? Are there no poor houses left?
Dr. David Himmelstein is associate professor of medicine at Harvard. He says private health insurance is a defective product, akin to an umbrella that melts in the rain. Unless you're Warren Buffett, your family is just one serious illness away from bankruptcy.
That's anybody! Anybody!
I don't care how well off you are. You are, you know, because we talk about the working poor in this country, and we say that they are one flat tire, one paycheck away from absolute disaster. And it's true. But as I've often argued, we have a failure to comprehend something essential in this country. And that is, there's only two kinds of people in this country, them that work and them that don't. And I don't care if you're making $500,000 a year. If somebody else signs your paycheck, you're a worker. I don't care if you sit behind a computer and code and write code. I don't care if you sit behind a computer and design CGIs. I don't care if you're working day and night on a new operating system for Apple or Microsoft, and somehow or another you think you're better than a nursing assistant who empties bedpans or a guy who drives nails for a living. You're not. You're a worker. And as long as you're a worker and receiving someone else's autograph every 2 weeks or so, you're vulnerable. You are as liable as the next guy or gal to be hurled into the maw of the for-profit meat grinder should you so much as cough. Meanwhile, we're having a devilishly difficult time having a conversation about how we're going to insure people with anything other than a profit-driven public option healthcare system. And that just drives me crazier than a sprayed roach. It goes without saying that the numbers are out there and easily discovered. The fact of the matter is, there's not an insurance company operating for profit out there that can operate with the same administrative efficiency as Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid. Because they are public and because they are not for profit, they operate with lean efficiency. Sure, they make their mistakes, but the mistakes can be more easily corrected because there is no need to service a profit and loss statement on a quarterly basis or worry about whether the share price is going to go up by a penny or 2 pennies. Or 10. The evidence is all over this country. In shattered dreams, shattered families, shattered homes, and lying at the bottom of freshly dug ice-cold graves. That where health care is concerned in this country, it's not, the system isn't broken. The system is working as it was designed by the profiteers to work, and you get to be damned in the equation. Are we okay? Are we square with that? That's the one issue that I take with this, you know, the U.S. healthcare financing system is broken. No, it's not. This is what they want. You remember the words of the giant in Jack and the Beanstalk? I'll grind your bones to make my bread. The giant in Jack and the Beanstalk worked for a healthcare insurance company, trust me. It's working just fine. It's working the way they want it. They're making money hand over fist. Off in some cubicle in Philadelphia somewhere, there's a little functionary who denied a liver transplant to a 17-year-old girl in California, got a Christmas bonus for it, and feels great about having actively killed that young lady. And it happens every day, all over the country. And yet there are working people out there who say, I don't want none of that socialized medicine. Let me die before I get the socialized medicine, dear Jesus. I don't want to go to hell for being a communist. Yeah, check these statistics out real quick. Most medically bankrupt families were middle class. About 60% of them had attended college, and more than 66% owned a home. Ha 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 ha, not anymore, sucker. You've got for-profit health care. Ha 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 ha, you lose. You see, that's what happens. You pump all your money into the equity that is your home. You know, most people's homes are their single greatest aggregations of liquid equity. Or easily liquidable equity. And then when, say, those stabbing chest pains start in daddy's left side, or mama steps out of the shower with a pale and ashen look on her face and says, honey, I found a lump. Well, that's when the system starts to rub its little palms together. Hey, we got another one! Because in the for-profit healthcare industry, agony means money. Agony is good. Agony is a delightful opportunity to increase share price. I love me some money. And therefore, love me some agony. How do people get up and go to work for these organizations? What has to happen? What has to transpire inside the human psyche when you get up, you get out of bed, she puts on her business attire, or he puts on his suit? And they go whistling out the door, knowing that they're facing 8 hours of screwing their fellow Americans every day. But what? The nice paycheck takes all the pain away? Takes all the guilt away? I don't understand them. I don't profess to understand them. But then again, I don't understand people who blow up mountains and say, well, I gotta keep blowing up the mountains or I'll put my family on the welfare. I don't understand them. Simply don't. Just don't. I don't profess to... I'm not saying I'm better. I'm certainly not. I'm not saying I'm more intelligent, because there's no proof of that either. But I'm just saying that I don't understand I don't understand how perhaps the human mind has the ability to compartmentalize itself in that way so that you can stand to go and do that. And I guess that's an amazing function of the human brain, the human mind. Because if you did that for a living, and every night you were visited by what you had done in your sleep, you'd be a shell of a person after only a couple of months. And you would dread the coming of the dark. And closing your eyes would be something of a hell. So the human mind compartmentalizes us. And for 8 hours a day, the human mind allows us to focus on siphoning money out of people in agony. For 8 hours a day, the human mind allows us to focus on screwing people in order that we can better ourselves and our corporate bottom line and our quarterly profit and loss statement. For 8 hours a day, the human mind is capable of allowing us to compartmentalize every evil thing that we do. And then we come home and we sit down to the pork roast and we say, pass the potatoes, and how was your day, dear? And son, what are we going to do about that math grade? Ah, Dad. Son, if you don't raise the math grade, you can't be like me and go out there and farm misery every day of your life. Got to get that math and science grade up, son. Couldn't do that. So hurrah, I suppose, for the human mind. We'll take a little break. And we will come back with your phone calls. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is Activist Radio. This is The Horn.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without cries. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my eyes.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Welcome back. About 21 minutes before the hour, 21 minutes left in this truncated edition of the show. Sorry for the short Monday version, but outside of my duties behind the microphone, I am also a neighbor. And that word means a lot to me. And I know it means a lot to you, so therefore you will know, why I'm heading out. Let's go to the phones. Haven't heard from Brother Albert in a while. Brother Albert, how are you?
Brother Bob, how are we today?
Oh, we are fine.
It's the good news, you know. I figured I have to give you a call and celebrate. And is this ruling against Blankenship? Is this the dawn of a new day in the Supreme Court in rational sanity? Are we going to get Sotomayor on there, once the right wing completely unhinges and falls down a dark, slimy... Man, these people have lost their minds. You opened up with such beautiful poetry and prose, and to sit there, I can't follow that up. But, I can't understand these people. I can't understand...
The justice nominee... Sotomayor has broken her ankle.
Yeah.
This is not a joke. I mean, she really did.
Yeah.
And anybody who knows anything, those things are hell to heal. You know, it's kind of like a broken finger. It's one of those, it's not like you set it and forget it. It's an ankle, for God's sakes. It's a joint.
Yeah.
In another Repiglick and Party stay classy moment, yeah, you're going to love this. Who else but the head of the Republican Party, Flush Flemball, just felt he had to comment on it today, inquiring, would a white male judge have fractured his ankle in the same way?
No way.
Yeah, way.
You serious?
I wish I was
Seriously.
Lying. Yeah. I'm sorry that the line between Bob making stuff up and Repiglick and reality has become so damn narrow, he really said
that's
that.
Good. No, that's good news that they're that unhinged. I mean, they're ridiculous. They're, you know, They're like, they're dead wood, you know, and I don't want to fall into the, you know, that stupid logical.
Now, we can't, be, dead wood, we can't be talking about what Rush did on his last Dominican vacation. Now, stop that.
There we go.
Took me a minute.
But, you know, I mean, come on now. I mean, you know, you got this guy over here, you know, and this whole right wing, you know, right to life nonsense. They're over there, you know, starting their assassinations again. You know, nothing new, you know, more extremists threatening Obama. And, you know, I mean, they just are complete. Did you? Now, you know, I got the relatives on the on that side of the fence.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
in-laws, by the way. But, you know, I don't know why. I don't know why they think I'd want to know this. They must not know me. That's the only way I can say it.
They're trying to save you. They're testifying. They're witnessing, Brother Albert.
Yeah, but see, this wasn't witnessing. This was just one of those stupid things from the American Family Association that
yeah.
you love to read so much. Have you read that one about the guns and all that other stuff? Tony Perkins and...
The bring your gun to church thing?
I honestly, I just couldn't. I mean, I was on vacation. I've been enjoying some housework, like, you know, 100 feet of sewer pipe, cold sewer pipe snake. I was doing that.
Oh, that's a blast.
Right now I'm nursing a baby blackbird that my daughter's found, and I'm out there digging up worms in this 45-degree summer day of rain and sleet and hail, and, you know, it's only June. You know, so I've been doing those kinds of things, and I saw that, and
I have to ask real quick, does hail and sleet in June make you just stand in the middle of it with it falling all around you and on you and just power swear, Albert? Because that's what it does to me. Flag, stagging, brazzle, knack, flassin', march, stooping, dice, black, thurp, sleet!
I did,
June.
I wanted a garden, I did. I wanted a garden, and that's, you know... That doesn't look so hopeful. I don't even know if I'm going to get raspberries, and those things can survive through anything. It's just filthy. Filthy weather. But we should keep burning coal and burning gasoline. And
good for America.
The 650s. Yeah, it's good for America, and, you know, eating the poor and eating the sick. I mean, there's another story that really just flipped me out was when they actually addressed the interest rates that those payday loan places offer. Now, one thing I just got to say about the payday loan shacks is they're made to look, if you notice, they all look the same. And there's a reason that they all, I mean, you know, McDonald's all look the same. Yeah, they may be franchised, but they're still McDonald's, you know what I mean? These things all look the same. All the audited, you know, the red and yellow and all the, you know, they have
yep.
their own, you know, green and white, and they have their little payday checks and all that thing, up to $5,000, up to $50,000. Did you read what their interest rates were up to on some of these places? Up in the poorest of poor places, up to 700%.
Huh?
700% interest on a...
I know guys with their names ending in vowels who wear white-on-white ties who would be ashamed to admit that.
700%. Now, the real scummy thing is who really owns these payday things?
Banks.
And it's banks like Wells Fargo, exactly. Bank of America, all these places that get these, you know, like... When we talk taxes, you know, we get these, you know, of course now we're in the recession, so we're always hearing, you know, talk about taxes because states are not going to be able to meet their budgets and this and this and that, and people are like, oh, I don't want to pay, and I don't want to do this, and I don't want to do that. But, you know, until the cost comes home to roost, like what you were talking about in terms of medical, you know, our cannibalistic medical system, you know, until it comes home to roost, nobody cares. And by the time they care, then, you know, they're all alone because nobody else cares. You know, everybody else has their... You know, they think they have their coverage and they have their, you know, generic Cipro, which, you know, certainly costs $6 versus, you know, $160. You know, so they'll take it and they'll shut up and they'll take their pills and they'll listen to their doctor and, you know, and until they get up to their $2 million limit, which, you know, as they charge for everything nowadays, man, you go to the hospital, it don't take long to reach that. And, you know, and then you got to pay, what, 30% of it or 50% of it, depending on how... What program you're in. But, you know, we sit there and we talk about, you know, countries like Canada and countries like Sweden and Switzerland and all these other places that have far greater life expectancies, even among their high-risk populations. You know, people who smoke and drink and, you know, party hardy. They tend to live longer in these other countries for some reason or another. And the only thing I can really break it down, besides the medical, I don't want to get into, you know, that whole pissing contest of, oh, our system's the best and da, 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 we have all the machines. And I don't want to even get into that, 'cause that's just, yeah, that's just juvenile. I think it's all about stress. You know, I think, you know, if you're going to sit there and think about, you know, oh, I found, honey, I found a lump in my breast. Well, my God, the last thing we want to worry about is pain. I mean, it's sitting there losing the house.
Yeah, my God, I mean, can you imagine that scenario? I mean, and it's very real.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm sick, and the first, well, how can we afford to take care of this? What? And you live in a civilized country?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Oh, Bob, why don't you just buck up, shut up, rub some spit on.
I'll be honest. I'm going crazy here, because this little white schnauzer that I bonded with is sick and may die. And I'm worried sick. And I can't do a damn thing about it. And that's a dog.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dog.
Oh, yeah. I know. Yeah. I mean, and then when it comes into people, you know, it's a whole other dimension of love. And, you know, I mean, it's, you know, I don't like to ever cheapen love, but man, when we're talking about people and when we're talking about, you know, I mean, I can't, you know, if my dog was to get sick at the same time, you know, I mean, and the vet bill starts looking at, you know, $1,800 and sorry, my dog, I love you very much, but I have to feed the kids too, you know, and there are priorities, but what happens if, you know, the kids get sick, and what happens if this, and, you know, and then I really got to stress it out. I mean, you know, I try to take it as, you know, I try to take the least stress, you know, the least stress as possible, and I try to mend my own wounds, but even though I do that, and I don't try to use my medical insurance, because, you know, Allah or whatever, spaghetti monster forbid, I ever get into some trouble and actually really need something, as in an accident or anything like that. You know, I don't want to be denied, you know, at the hospital gates. What the hell kind of system is that? Well, I mean, you know, and if they don't deny you, they'll put you into bankruptcy and put you homeless in the streets or living in a tent. You know, I mean, and this is not right. This is not the way, you know, these health insurance, you know, this is just not the sustainable way.
This is nothing, let's put it in terms maybe the right wing can understand. This is not something that would make you proud to be an American. Because that's, you know, that's what they're all about. Well, I'm proud to be an American. You mean you're proud of the accident of your birth? You're proud of an accident? You're proud of a stroke of dumb luck?
Yeah, I'm proud of
that's like being proud of being blue-eyed.
Yeah, proud that your mom drank six beers one night and let your dad in. I mean, it gets, you know, when we get down to the raw nitty-gritty of, you know, you know, where the rubber meets the road on a lot of these things, to have pride in such a thing that, I mean, actually feeds off. I mean, not for nothing as well, you know, not only our medical system, we're feeding off ourselves, but then we have our military industrial system that feeds off the death and corpses of other people in other countries.
Yes.
And, you know, these are like, we have this dissociative kind of mindset where, you know, those things that we think that we, you know what it is? It's like a credit card of consciousness. And I think the bills are starting to come in. I don't think we're going to be able to, I don't think people can sustain that. People do realize what they're doing. They do understand. I mean, you know, hey, even what's his name? What was that dirty Republican scammer that had his deathbed confession? Oh, how many of them have there been?
Lee Atwater
and the other one that, with the Kennedy assassination, what was that scummy guy's name? The waterworks guy. He had another deathbed confession. Everybody does, you know. I mean, eventually they'll come to. You know,
500 years ago, you just endowed a church to say prayers for your soul in hell every day, or purgatory, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now you have a deathbed confession.
Now you have a deathbed confession, but I don't think that. You know, I don't think collectively, I don't think our hearts have room in it for that kind of stuff anymore. I think we, as a whole, are getting more intolerant of this intolerance or this, just this feeding frenzy. I don't think anybody, once you sit there, now I think people are receptive to it. That's why, you know, people like us, we have to sit here and talk to our friends, talk to our families, talk to our neighbors in empathetic ways that can, you know, make them open their eyes and say, wow, this is, yeah, and most people want to talk to me now about it. I don't even have to do any talking. People come up to me, oh, you believe this crap and this crap and that crap, and that's a good thing. I can't see us, I can't see this path going on much longer. I'm seeing some good things, Bob. I mean, you know, you look at, you know, even you look at the cities. Remember when we talk about Star Trek because we're such geeks? You know, well, look at Chicago. We get down in the gutter, but we also got to get up to the, you know, the highlands and look down. And, you know, there is progress being made. And it may be, you know, a couple of green Band-Aids here and there, but that green Band-Aid at least is a beginning. You know, like just like this, you know, ruling against, you know, these coal companies buying judges. And just like, you know, I don't think a lot of even people are very enthusiastic about Obama's health care plan. I think everyone, when you really sit down and talk to them, they would rather have one, a single-payer system if they knew what it was. I mean, you know, you even without the socialism word and communism and all that other nonsense, I mean, we have, and Michael Moore pointed it out, and it's a very valid point. You know, back in the day, they used to have shields that you would put on your house that would be a number for a local fire department, and if another fire department came and saw that it wasn't your number, they wouldn't put out your fire. I mean, like, because you didn't pay their tax or whatever, you didn't pay for their service, which is utter nonsense. If, you know, if an ambulance comes, well, let the ambulance take the person to the hospital. Let the fire department put the fire out. Let the teachers teach the kids. I mean, if we're going to do things in a collective way, let's do it. If we're going to go to space, let's go. I mean, let's stop this, oh, how much can I siphon off it? Because at the end...
Stop with the half measures, you mean?
Oh, exactly. These half men and all this other stuff. I mean, it's a beginning. It's moving the rock.
You know, right. And that's, you know, you've struck, Albert, I think, the perfect working definition of bipartisanship. Or, no, not bipartisanship, but of compromise. Okay? One side wants a car with four wheels on it. The other side wants a car with one wheel on it. And they compromise on a car with two wheels on it, and it don't go nowhere. That's compromise.
Yeah, but at least you know, you would think that at least you go, you know, as the caveman sitting there, and, you know, as the idiocracy population sits around and scratches their head long enough, they'll realize that, oh, hey, this is our car, and we got two wheels on one side, what about on the other? You know, maybe we can get, you know, it's just
a... And in a reasonable society, you can do that, Albert. What scares the life out of me is that in this society, and I'm not trying to be, you know, negative Ned, but in this society, there is a right-wing... The smear and sleaze and slime and filth machine, you know, remember we talked about it, that outnumbers stuff like this program and any other liberal program by a score of about, what, 1,000, 2,000 plus hours to one, maybe 10,000 hours to one. And so if we get that groundswell of support, we may never know it, Albert, because the right the right-wing controlled corporatized media structure won't make any noise about it.
No, they won't. But eventually, you know, they'll be called on their BS long enough, and one day we will see Sean Hannity waterboarded, and Keith Olbermann might be living on the streets afterwards because he's going to have to pay so much money to charity. But, I mean, Mancow got waterboarded, and he barely got waterboarded. If you talk about water, Christopher Hitchens got waterboarded. I mean,
that's true. There's a difference.
He got waterboarded. I mean, and, you know, they said they were masks on. That's a different story. I mean, Mancow couldn't even take a couple seconds, much less.
And they poured it on his throat.
And he started. Ooh. But you see, this is the thing, and this is what I hope to see is I hope to see that, you know, once these issues, these chickens start coming home to roost. And this is in a sense why I think this is that core nerve of why people are like, well, I just want it to get worse. Because if it doesn't get any worse, then nobody's going to say, whoa, we need to clean this up. You know, it can only get so bad before everybody sits there and says, oh, hell no, we ain't doing this anymore. And I don't think our tolerance is as high as it was back during the 50s and 60s and, you know, of this day, of this age where people come home from these cannibalistic jobs and eat a pork roast coming from one of these Smithfield flu-inducing farms. And, you know, I mean, I think people are starting to kind of wake up to this, man, I want my food to be good for me. I want my this to be that for me. And I want, you know, my health care. I don't want my health. I don't want going to the doctor to be the most stressful thing next to a divorce. I don't want my going a trip to the doctor to cause a divorce and to cause a bankruptcy and to lose my house and to become homeless. I mean, no, who wants to do that? Who, I mean, you know, and I think we see little skitterings and scatterings of the edge of consciousness when we see people like this scummy right-wing freak, you know, thinks he needs to be a, he thinks he's a king of kings or whatever the hell he's thinking, you know, and now just we're bringing this up. Because everybody, and this is one thing that really bugs me, is every time you hear about, you know, the Muslims doing this and Muslim, oh, see how savage they are? Every time they do that, we're going to have to, I don't even know this scum guy, scumbag's name, but we're going to have to start knowing the names of these people that do these crimes. That, you know, how many of these right-wingers have gone into a church and shot up them because they're liberals and they couldn't kill the Hannitys? And, I mean, they couldn't kill the Overman and the Obama. And what about the other guy who's mailing the powder and the other guy? I mean, you know, and I think we're seeing...
Oh, by the way, and we've got one of those again.
What?
We've got a guy arrested over the weekend, accused of making threatening statements about President Obama.
Yep.
Daniel James Murray. Arrested Friday night in the parking lot of the Riverside Resort Hotel and Casino in Laughlin, Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
He recently withdrew $85,000 from a bank in St. George. Come on, this is easy. Utah. You know it had to be Utah or Idaho. Or Texas or Alabama. But Utah, you know, yeah, come on. $85,000 from a bank in St. George, Utah in two separate visits, told a teller, quote, "We're on a mission to kill the President of the United States." With all this mess going on under President Obama, with banks and the economy, I'm sure if citizens happen to lose their money, they will rise up and we could see killing and deaths. Yeah, this is the fun part. This is deadly serious, but you know, I read these things with a different kind of eyeball, man. On May 27th, he returned to the bank and tried to withdraw $12,000 but lacked proper identification. Here's what he said to the teller. "Not to be disrespectful, but if I don't get this money, someone's going to die." Not to be disrespectful, mind you.
No.
Now, meanwhile, over in South Carolina, Albert, the governor of South Carolina, who is, you know, crazy... He just signed a bill allowing guns to be carried to public schools in South Carolina.
Good plan.
That's going to work.
Yeah.
And what he said by way of explanation is, now, I'm not saying we need guns in schools, but I had a lot of teachers come to me and say, "Governor, I feel my Second Amendment rights are being violated because I can't carry my gun to school in my car and leave it in my car."
Uh-huh. Oh, my God.
Man, put down the mustard sauce and step away from the barbecue, Governor Sanford.
For real? Well, I know. It's always a one step backwards.
I mean, because no kid in any school, public or private, has ever broken into a teacher's car. It just hasn't happened. Because what the little Second Amendmenteers are going to do is they're going to take their gun. These gun-toting teachers are going to take their guns to school, and they're going to leave a dwarf under the seat taking care of it, and he's going to get out and say "freeze" when the little juvenile delinquent comes through the window.
Yep, just like that little thing from Spiderwick Chronicles.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. And meanwhile, on the way to the train the other day to get on the train to go to Washington to broadcast from the America's Future Now conference, I had to, well, it's D.C., and you usually count on a fair amount of walking.
Mm-hmm.
And we're at that point in my family, Albert, where my son appropriates my shoes. This is not to say that we do not buy the boy shoes, okay? We do. He just goes through them like through a goose.
Yeah.
I mean, he, you know, because he runs and he jumps and plays and carries on and climbs trees and stuff, and shoes just fall apart on his feet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how much you paid for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to, because he had appropriated my last decent pair of tennis shoes, I had to stop, and yes, the only thing open, and I apologize, and I will do penance, and I'm open for a quick flogging with 40 wet noodles. I had to stop at the Wally World because it was 7 o'clock in the morning, and there was nowhere else to buy a pair of shoes. And so I walked cringing into those the harsh overhead Klieg lights of command economy Wally World, and I go back and I find the cheapest pair of shoes I can find. And I pay for them, and I'm walking out of the store, and lo and behold, what do I see, Albert, but a guy walking out next to me with a freaking Glock on his hip.
Nice.
Like it's Dodge City or something. And he's got the handlebar mustache coming down, and he gets in a car, it's got the bumper sticker on it, and you can have my guns when you pry it from my cold, dead fingers, and on the other side there's a bumper sticker that says, God, Guns, and Guts Made America Great, and across the middle of the top, over the top window glass, there's another bumper sticker that says, when guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns. Yeah, I just can't hold a candle to that with the sticker on my truck that says, when bongs are outlawed, only outlaws will have bongs. No, I don't have one of those. And I'm sitting there thinking, holy crap! There weren't that many people in Walmart. If he'd decided to go, if he'd decided to go sideways, he'd have, hell, this is West Virginia. He'd have hunted me like a wounded deer. And the people in Walmart don't even look. Well, you know, we get them people all the time, just walking in here carrying the guns. I think he went back to the pharmacy and filled up his antidepressant prescription. Ha!
That makes you feel better.
7 o'clock in the morning, and I was wondering if they wondering, you know, it was a Sunday trip, and I was wondering what time they started serving booze on the train. Jiminy.
Am I going to be in a national news story this morning? I mean, yeah, you know, and I mean, we do have a long ways to go on a lot of things, and I mean, you know, you want to carry your little penis extender in with you everywhere you go, and. Man, you know, that's why I hearken to the days of Dune. And if we can get body shields, we won't have to worry about guns. But so we got to get some funding into the sciences. I'm telling you, we do have such a long way to go, and we have so many. Just they're dead, you know, they're dead wood, man. They're just, you know, and I think they're pruning themselves in the wind. Of change, if that's poetic or whatever that is, I just see it like that.
Well, I think you've got a reason to, Albert. I think I just stay too much on top of the on top of the ugly side.
Yeah. Well, when you live in the mouth of madness, you know, everything kind of. Yeah, that's why you got to take breaks and you got to kind of, you know, veg out a little bit and, you know. I don't know, refocus the mind.
Well, that's like tomorrow when we go to this appeal board hearing down in Charleston. While I'm out this evening, I'm going to stop and buy a can of tennis balls and a roll of duct tape because I'm going to have Agnes stuff a tennis ball in my mouth and duct tape around my head because the instant that they say, and the citizens failed to carry their burden of showing why the coal company's permit should not be renewed, If I don't have that tennis ball in there to make every noise I make be, I'm just going to stand up and start screaming expletives, and the next thing you know, I'm going to be saying hello to a Kanawha County Sheriff's deputy. I mean, not because I'm going to do anything wrong or untoward, or that Jesus, you know, 100 people show up and say please, and they give science, and they give religion, and they give social and cultural and political reasons for not, and we didn't carry a burden? When there wasn't even anybody on the other side to advance their burden? 100-0, and we lost? Yeah, we lost the game 100-0. Scored 100 points on you, did they? No, we scored the 100 points and still lost. Yeah. Ah! Hey, Albert, I got to roll along, brother, but we've missed you.
Absolutely. I got that essay. It's almost done in my mind, and I just got to put it to paper.
All right.
All right, if you remember.
Yes, I do remember.
Okay. All right. We'll chat with you later.
Bye. All right. Talk to you later, Albert.
Brother.
Bye now. The sage of Southwest Wisconsin, that is Brother Albert. And I do believe Guy James is with us now. Guy James, is that you? Hey, Guy. Oh. Let's see. Maybe I lost Guy and he's coming back now. I had a private message from him saying I'm on the line. So let's wait a second. Let me get this thing in here and Okay. Is that you, Guy James?
That is me, Bob.
How are you?
I figured I was gonna you hung up on me because I was gonna tell some stories about you.
No, God, no, not the stories, please, not the stories. Did the check not arrive?
You know, you have to go buy a new pair of shoes. I'm not surprised. Any of you people ever tried to walk with Bob Kincaid? He walks like 47 miles an hour. You can't keep up with him. And I couldn't have kept up with him with a bicycle. You must wear our shoes faster than any man alive.
I used to, but unfortunately, it's my son that does the shoe wearing out now.
Well, you like the road runner. I guess it's got something to do with the hills in West Virginia. You get all.
I get on flat ground and it feels like flying, Guy.
Well, if any of you've ever been for a walk with Bob, you know he moves right along, and we old guys, even though I don't smoke, you know, have to stop and do a little wheezing every once in a while after trying to keep up with Bob.
Now you cannot accuse me of walking fast after that carnivorous festival we attended Monday night.
No, I'd have to accuse you of rolling fast.
I was moving slow.
I looked up the website of that place just so I could drool some more.
And you do, don't you?
They got a beautiful website, and all that meat is on the pictures that are on there. Well, I bet all the vegans and vegetarians and everything, they're not liking us very much.
Well, but, to each his own, and yeah. Lord knows I don't do that very often. Most, you know, I consume a lot of soup around here that has little teeny tiny pieces of things in it. But, oh, man. Yeah, when they come to the table with that flaming skewer, and you just fork the whole thing off on the plate there, son, would you? I mean, yeah. And
put
see,
it down, no steak sauce, no nothing. Let's just go. It was good. Bob, I had a tremendous, tremendous experience last week because of you being there. We both had some great guests and all, but the camaraderie and friendship that we shared in Washington last week was really special.
It was an absolute delight, Guy. The feeling is by far mutual.
Great time. One good meal, one bad meal.
Yeah, we did. We only batted 500 on that trip.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the other meal was small. What's the theory behind that, Guy? That you have to feed the eye as well as the gullet?
Doesn't work for me.
No.
Doesn't work, and I especially don't like people drawing designs on my plate with my mashed potatoes.
You know, I used to get in trouble in first grade for that.
No, I didn't get that. It looked like they put a dollop of mashed potatoes on the plate and went over them with a comb or something. I don't know. Call me unsophisticated, but
well, I remember. You know, I love cooking shows and stuff, and I know you're a cook as well. I used to watch Julia Childs. God rest her soul. And I remember she had what was that last show she did? Cooking with in the Kitchen with Julia or some such.
Yes.
Yeah. and I remember Dan Aykroyd's impression of her. That was just precious.
Yes.
Yeah. But she had this highfalutin chef on, who pulled out prepared some meal, and set it on the plate in front of Julia, and it was all stacked up and piled up, and things laying on things with a little crispy thing. Like you know, some sort of, oh, I don't know, modern art architecture thing. And she said, oh, my, yes, isn't that lovely? It looks like someone's hands have just been all over it.
Oh, yeah, she was a treat. Well, she was a spy during the Second World War.
Yeah, worked for the OSS. And, in fact, there's a movie out about her now, or coming out.
No kidding, I did. How did we get off on Julia Child?
The restaurant, small food, looked like somebody's hands had been all over it playing in the mashed potatoes.
And mashed potatoes, yeah. I read the whole court case today after it came down, and I don't know that I've ever been more ashamed of four men in my life, Alito, Roberts, Thomas, and Scalia, with this... Colburn case here. Oh my God! How could you? Did you read that case?
I have not read the case itself, Guy. For some reason, I couldn't find the actual online version of it, but I'm sure it is horrifying. And just for the record, we refer to those four in a certain order here because it's very convenient. That's Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, which just conveniently spells rats.
Yeah. I mean, the most absurd. I read Roberts wrote the dissenting opinion, and it's actually comical. It really is. And if that's really and truly what the right wants on the Supreme Court, God help us all. That was the most ridiculous decision I've seen in my lifetime. I mean, not decision, but their dissent was, it's a thing to behold. It really is. You'll have to read it. But here we are back safely ensconced in the studio, and you are back full tilt, I see, and in fine fettle tonight. What did you say earlier about cutting the show short or something?
Well, I was going to, but we're going to run over a little bit, but that's okay. I'm just helping out a neighbor this evening. Had some stuff that he needed, what passes for my expertise on a little production thing across the river at the local community theater. And, you know, I'm like a moth to a light bulb with that kind of stuff. Can't help it.
Amen, brother. Oh, yes.
Well, the nice thing is, though, Guy, you could, you know, where community theater is concerned, you could audition for the musicals. I was always left out of those because, you know, you can carry a tune. I can't.
Certainly have done my share of them over the years. I was Emile Dubec in South Pacific.
How did I know? Because we said that, and you said you had, and the first thing that came into my mind was Some Enchanted Evening. Yeah. Boom.
Yeah, those were the days. That's great fun. I know those Tony Awards were on TV last night, and I can understand why somebody would rather be on stage than in the movies or any other form of entertainment. The stage is where it's at. Oh, yes.
Pure electricity of like the 440 variety, just running through you in the live stuff. Because, you know,
I don't want to hold you up too long. I just did want to comment, Bob, that we had some special times last week, extraordinarily special. And it was great being there. And I know all the listeners could understand from the tenor of our voices that we were understanding. We were liking it and wanted you to know that I had a great time, and we're looking forward to more here in the very near future.
Indeed we are. I'm hoping things come together. You know, we're kind of riding on the razor's edge right now, but we're hanging on for dear life to get to August because I want to do that Netroots Nation thing.
Razor's edge is a good way to put it. It certainly is, and I hope everybody keeps that in mind. So
exactly.
Bob, take care. I probably will talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, great. I'll be looking forward to the call, and we'll be anxiously awaiting tomorrow's broadcast.
By the way, I want to let everybody know, if I can put in a quick plug here.
Sure.
I've got a guest on Thursday that's just going to, I can't wait myself. So, anyway.
Hot diggity.
Sir. Yeah. So, see you, Bob. Take care. Probably talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Take care, Guy. Bye now.
Bye now.
My colleague, Guy James, calling from Florida, where he is now safely returned home. He, after a long plane flight, I back here to the hills after a long and painful railroad trip. You know, there was no real pressure to get home on Wednesday evening because I knew the thing arrived at 6:30 p.m. Everybody on God's green earth knew that that we were going to be off air, Guy and I, that day. But there's nothing quite like having one of those sliding doors in a railroad car slam with its full force into your finger. I'm beginning to get feeling back in my middle finger now. And the problem with getting feeling back in your middle finger after it's been nicely crushed by the full weight of a flying 250 or 300, 400, 500-pound door, I don't know what it was, steel and glass, whatever. The problem with getting feeling back in that is the feeling that comes back is decidedly not good. And if you're one of those people who types with all their fingers and not just your two indexes, and I never took typing in high school, but you know, the whole, you know, I used more than one. Every letter that middle finger hit, because I do a lot of typing, wow. It's like little electrical bursts right through your entire being. But it's getting better. The fingernail never managed to turn black. The rest of the end of my right hand middle finger did, but the fingernail didn't. And now we're just down to a sort of mild purple. But the rest of the trip was wonderful. Let's keep things rolling along. I think we've got Luke with us. Luke, you still there?
Hey, I'm still there, Bob.
Cool.
Well, like I said, I know you're tight for.
No sweat. Take your time.
Let's see. Like you say, the rat, as we call it now, the rats.
Yeah, there are rats in the SCOTUS.
The dissenting opinion. I'm curious to read that. That, like I say, it's gotta be fun to read. But let's see. You saw the thing where that Newt and Mr. Huckabee were at one of these things, and they now saying that at one of their little get-togethers, they say pagans have surrounded the good folks of America.
Pagans? Really? Pagans. The motorcycle gang?
I was wondering about that. I thought, last time I heard pagans, wasn't that Dragnet? Wasn't that a group, you know, the pagan? You know, Dan Aykroyd's version?
Right. With the sheepskin leggings and it, you know, from the bad Dragnet movie? Right.
Yep. But apparently they had one of their get-togethers, and apparently Newt made this, and apparently Huckabee kind of seconded it. Said that the pagans have surrounded the good people of America, and that's why the people in religion have to stay involved in politics.
Yeah, well, you know, if Newt's down to the point where that's his, that I guess everybody's got to have something to keep him going. If he's,
you know, how, well, you know how
pagans.
It's like Newt just sort of shoots in all directions. Figures he's got to hit something eventually.
God, he said it sounds like something. It reminds me of Darren McGavin from the Christmas Story. Bumpuses, pagans.
Well, you know, I mean, it's bad when you're sitting there going and you're starting to compare him with people like Alan Keyes. It's like, this sounds like something Alan Keyes would say, you know. As I say,
well, that's because the Alan Keyes wing of the Republican Party has taken over the Republican Party to the extent that they were ever distinguishable.
Well, have you seen the new thing now that apparently they're having all this not brouhaha, but, you know, disagree about where Palin is going to go to one of these fundraisers.
Oh, yeah, but at first they invited her, then she declined. It's a combined meeting of the Pig-Lickin' Senatorial Campaign Committee and the National Republican Congressional Committee, and they're going to have one of those super friends joint sessions.
Well, my thing is what I've been reading here, from what I've pretty much figured out, I think Palin's handlers have finally figured out the best thing in the world. Don't let her talk. Go up, shake hands, and all that. Just first stick the microphone, say, no.
Well, the funny thing, though, is that originally they invited her to be the keynote, but her handlers, you know, because she has really handlers, said, well, she's going to be busy and can't come. So then they turn around and they invite Newt.
Yeah.
And for good or, you know, Newt Gingrich is Newt Gingrich is Newt Gingrich, to paraphrase Gertrude Stein. But he says, okay, yeah, I'll do it. And then, lo and behold, Palin says, golly, I can be there after all. Don't you know? And they said, okay, fine, you can come, but you can't speak. What? And so now there's another one of those snits in the Repiglican party.
Well, this works for me, I'll say, but, you know, I mean, it's like you say, it is sort of like watching an Abbott and Costello routine. You're just kind of sitting there going,
Yeah, but see, I've got the compromise on this, Luke.
Okay.
I can fix this for the Repiglickins, because I'm just that nice a guy. Let her, okay, she can't speak, but after, she can play the Star Spangled Banner on her flute.
That'll work, oh yeah.
In a bathing suit.
But, you know, it's like say the SNL versions of them seem to be much smarter than they are. You know, it's just sometimes watching them, you're just kind of just, like I say, you're just kind of sitting there just, have one of those moments where you just kind of shake your head going, you know, maybe if you ever do this enough, it's going to start making sense to me because my brain will come loose, apparently. But the one I enjoyed this weekend was, what an interesting, though, how some people have talked about it and some people are trying to fight against it, where, you know, E.J. Dion was made his thing, you know, talking about, you know, how Newt and Rush are winning because people are talking about them, and now they're talking about them like they're mainstream. And I saw it talked about two, three times this weekend on the weekend head show. But you know what? Nobody bothered to have EJ on. Even ABC, where he appears, didn't bother to have him on. And it's interesting how you sit there and you quote said, yeah, he said something about it, but we can't talk about it. Because apparently they couldn't have him on either. It's like, you know, it's one of those things where, like, again, you're just shaking your head going, what the hell are you doing? You know, and I tried watching Kurtz this weekend, which I tell you what, that thing was a oh gosh. It's like, you know, every time he says he's a media critic, somebody should show up and start beating him over the head going, no, he's not! No, he's not! When you sit there defending Bill O'Reilly.
Hey.
You know, and you're sitting there going, well, you can't hold him guilty of this. And I'm sitting there going, these are the same people who every time something would happen in the last 10 or 12 years would blame it on the media. Oh, it's all because of movies and TV and the Internet. But amazingly enough, when it's talk radio or if it's Fox News, no, that doesn't affect it. Just because Bill O'Reilly's been on the air for the last 3 years calling a man a murderer.
It, right. Or, you know, and well, did you catch this? He was bloviating and palavering on again, talking with someone who was opposed to him on the issue, you know, like a normal person. And he had a Freudian slip.
Uh-oh.
In the course of all this talking about the murder of Dr. Tiller, he's cruising right along and waxing rabid, and inadvertently, I assume, referred to him as Dr. Killer.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of these things where...
Man, we'll do it live.
Oh, I'm just curious to see what they're going to end up doing. I don't know when they've had it or if we're having it. I'm sure Fox News will be there to cover the gentleman's funeral, because I'm sure that one or two of these groups are showing up to protest the whole nine yards.
Well, a lot of people involved in the women's health care movement were at the memorial service, and frankly, I'm surprised that something god-awful didn't happen.
Well, actually, I'm just surprised, really, that Fox and them didn't show up with lights and the helicopters and everything. Well, we got to cover this. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, I saw the thing over at Crooks and Liars where they ripped ABC because ABC ran up abortion doctor when they were doing the memoriam thing, you know, at the end of their show.
Yeah, I'm surprised it wasn't abortion doctor goes to hell.
Yeah. You know, and they were just sitting there going, look, he's a doctor. You know, you put down a women's care doctor. That's it. Now, if you want to put that, that's fine. You're editorializing when you start doing that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Some of the things they do, you know, it's like I say, some people that go on and claim they're critical of the media, it's like they're critical of the media. They just use it as an excuse to talk the story again without saying anything bad about the media, but we just want to talk the story a little bit more.
Yeah, it's called publicity.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's like the thing, well, we can't talk about sex, but we're going to have to show you these pictures of these women in the bikinis. Just, you know,
yeah, because I'm enough of a geek that I have at least a de minimis functioning definition of criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean, like, you know, your tie's crooked criticism. I mean that act of analyzing something in such a way as to make a determination as to whether it is good or bad, and then explaining one's reasoning behind the determination made. And nothing that these... Howie Kurtz, oh, please. Yeah, nothing that clown does can be even remotely held to be in the same category as criticism.
You know, well, it's one of those things. It's like, just remember, you know, when Glenn Beck was on Headline News, you couldn't get Howie to say a bad word about Glenn Beck if you put a gun to his head. In fact, he barely mentioned him unless he just absolutely had to.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, I saw the thing. Apparently this week we get a treat on Comedy Central. This is the week that Mr. Colbert is in Iraq.
That's true. Because I did read that he asked on the way over, this does count as military service, doesn't it? I might want to run for office someday.
So this ought to be an interesting week to watch to watch Mr. Colbert in the evening. If it's available, if not, I'm sure it's on their website.
Yeah, and hopefully it'll pop up at Crooks and Liars. And yeah.
Well, like I say, it ought to be pretty good from the promotion they're doing on it. It sounds like it is. All right, Bob, I'm going to let you go, and I know you got other people and you got things to do. See you.
All right.
Good evening.
Luke, you have a good evening. Good to hear from you, brother.
Bye-bye.
All right, talk to you later. Bye now.
Bye.
Calling from the hills of East Tennessee, that's our buddy Luke. Email rolling in before I wrap things up this evening. Our news ninja, Susan,
writes in to inform me the story about the woman from Washington County, Oregon. She says, Washington County is just west of Portland, very built up. In fact, News Ninja Gene lives in Washington County. And signs off, Susan in Columbia County, Oregon. See, even at this vast distance, I'm getting my West Coast geography in. Yeah, if you see that, oh my God, those eyes, the eyes on the, my God. And by the way, our buddy Dennis from Kentucky sent me an email of a column from Leonard Pitts at the Miami Herald. What if I really were a bogeyman? And the reason I think of this is when I saw the photograph of the woman who apparently birthed the newborn and then killed the mother, or maybe vice versa, I don't know, and stuffed her body under the kitchen crawl space. They looked like the eyes of a monster, the woman did. And for those keeping score at home, or those listening alone, sorry, Keith Olbermann, I just love that line. She was a white lady, just in case you were. Of course she was. But if you get a chance, go to Miami Herald, M-I-A-M-I-H-E-R-A-L-D, MiamiHerald.com, and read Leonard Pitt's column, What If I Really Were a Bogeyman? It starts, I guess the jumping off place was the story of a woman named Bonnie Sweeten. She said she'd been kidnapped along with her daughter, but the phone call that she made to disclose her kidnapping apparently came from a cell phone in a hotel room at Disney World. Leonard Pitts writes, I am your scapegoat. I'm your bogeyman. Brown-skinned, kinky-haired, black man, me. So I was not surprised. It was just another day at the office last week when a white woman from suburban Philadelphia called police from her cell phone, claiming she had been locked in the trunk of a Cadillac by two black men. Nor was I shocked. It was just another day in the life when police said Bonnie Sweeten was actually holed up in a luxury hotel at Walt Disney World, and there never was a kidnapping, much less by two black men. I am your scapegoat. I am your bogeyman. So I'm used to these things. In fact, they happen often. Happened just a few months ago when that John McCain campaign worker said she was robbed by a burly black man who carved a B into her face, as in Barack, get it? It turned out she carved the letter herself and then blamed a black man. This is brilliant writing on the part of Leonard Pitts. And working as he does in Miami, I'm sure he gets all kinds of death threats and hate mail. That column is worth your effort. And it goes hand in hand with something that's been sitting around in my stack for a while. Goes back about 6 days. A comment by a guy by the name of Manuel Miranda. He is, in a past life, he served as an aide to former Senate Majority Leader Bill the Cat Killer Frist. All we want is an up or down vote. He has been going six guns a-blazing. Oh, it's only halfway a pun, or halfway a joke, halfway facetious. He's been going hammer and tongs against the nomination of Sonia Sotomayor to the Supreme Court of the United States. Back on the 2nd, which I guess was Tuesday, yes. Back on the 2nd, in fact, while Guy and I were broadcasting from Washington, D.C., back on the 2nd, he was attending a luncheon at, where else, the Heritage Foundation. It was a luncheon for conservative bloggers.
You bloggers!
And he was talking about how so-called conservatives, in other words, honorless bastards, could attack Sonia Sotomayor's qualifications without alienating the Latino community. And he said the following. Hispanic polls, Hispanic surveys, indicate that Hispanics think just like everyone else. We're not like African Americans. We think just like everybody else. Now, lest I be accused of not providing context, he followed by saying, when I was on the leader's staff, someone called me once and asked me, what's Senator Frist's Hispanic agenda? And I said, low taxes, better education, more jobs. What are you talking about? And that's how Hispanics are. This is an opportunity to educate them on all our issues, and they will resonate in the way that they resonate with everyone else. Except, you know, the African Americans. Because by definition, Manuel Miranda says that African Americans don't think like regular Americans. And I understand what Albert says. You know, I'm glad to see that it's hateful and it's disgusting. But you know what? You prefer that the Klan hold rallies in public than having them marching in secret by night. And I think that was the tenor of perhaps of Albert's comment. Let them be this way. Let the whole wide world see them for what they are. But then again, where is the outcry in the media, the for-profit media? Where is the outcry over this remark? Now, bear in mind, Manuel Miranda is not exactly an upstanding man. He got stone busted because he was the guy who hacked into the files of Senate Democrats while he was working for Bill the Cat Killer Frist. Latinos are not like African Americans. We think just like everybody else. We're paler! Dear Lord. That's tough to stomach. I could easily go on for the rest of the second half of the program. It is about 7:30 p.m. here on the East Coast. We're an hour and a half through the program. But I do need to go and do this thing because the friend that I'm helping out is a friend without whose help this show would not be going on. He has generously shared his time to help make the horn work on a number of occasions. And this being the rare occasion when he has asked me for my help, I feel honor-bound and friendship-bound. Try to help. So I guess we'll wrap it up with that. Sorry about the foreshortened version, but you know what? I'll be back tomorrow night. I will be back Wednesday night, and there should be an abundance of things to talk about. I will try to follow the news through the day as much as possible while we sit. We should be back home probably by noon. But they scheduled this thing for 8:30 in the morning, and for us to get to Charleston by, yeesh, you don't want to think about it. Ain't pretty. So I will leave it at that. Thank you to everyone who makes the program thanks to everyone who makes the program go. Thanks to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch, for their continuing support of this program. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. They fight continuously, and there will be folks from Coal River Mountain Watch at our hearing tomorrow. I don't live in the Coal River Valley, but they understand that everybody's downstream, and they will be there, because that's what comradeship and friendship and understanding the common nature of our misery, as it were, is all about. It is June. We are struggling for July. And we need your help. You stepped up real big time last month. And I understand that people are doing all they can. Right now, we want to get through July. We've got to make it to August. What happens in August in Pittsburgh may be the biggest thing that we've ever had the opportunity to do to help bring others to the conversation and to the table. It is June. and we have July to worry about. And if you can spare anything, the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com is there. There is also a snail mail address. I had a very kind phone call Friday night after the program. A listener, whom I presume prefers to remain nameless, called and said, sending you some money. Take X amount of it, put it toward the bills. But, Bob, take another portion of it and take Agnes to dinner. And then take $10 and give it to the boy. Some of these messages I get from you guys, well, the ones I have to read are hard to read sometimes because my eyes well up with tears. You never cease to amaze me, and I am always honored that you invite me into your homes, your cars, your iPods, your MP3 players, your computers, and I am, without a doubt, honored. So that's the program for this evening, and I look forward to tomorrow night. And of course, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.